So I had the vision and the dream 1 month after he died. I was Led Zeppelin.
Did you say you were into Elvis?
I wasn't. I listened to him as a like a 13-year-old and watched, went into his movies, but I was not into his music. And I didn't sing. I didn't think I could sing. And then I had this dream. I was in this little church out in the country, and I looked around, and there was nothing but guitar players. All the most famous guitar players in the world were there. And Chuck Berry was the preacher. And he was up there just giving everybody, hell for not practicing enough and not, caring enough. And I later saw a documentary on Chuck Berry where Keith Richards, the guitar for Rolling Stones, put together a band. And Keith Richards said that Chuck Berry was the hardest person. And he said he copied his style. That was his, whatever you want to call it, hero or whatever. So he copied Chuck Berry's guitar style. And he said trying to deal with Chuck is almost impossible. And Chuck actually punched him in the face for picking up his guitar. And Jerry Lee Lewis said that him and Chuck Berry got in a fight who was the king of rock and roll. So after I saw that, I said, well, no wonder Chuck Berry was the preacher, because in that documentary, he sits there and just chews Keith Richards out for not playing Memphis correctly. Like, you're missing this note, dude. Try it again. And he goes, no, you're still not getting it. Keith Richards would just sit there and just shake his head. And so then at the end of the sermon, he says, we have a special guest, and he wants to come out and talk to you guys. So and he said, it's Elvis. This was a month after Elvis died, and he came out, and Elvis starts talking, and he goes into how he got, derailed and so forth. And he says, I need someone to finish my mission. I had a mission, and I need somebody to do it. And he said, that person is here, and he pointed right at me, and he said, it's you, Kyle. He said, you can do it. And he said, I just come up here. I went up there, sit next to him, and Chuck, he put his arm around me. And he said, this is not going to be like what you think. He says, there's going to be thousands, if not 10,000s of imitators, and they don't get it. It is not about my personality looking like me. It's all about my music. And so I learned all his music, and I actually wrote Pastor Murray, the guy I studied with, and told him that all Elvis songs are updated versions of what the Bible says. Like, give you a perfect example, you ain't nothing but a hound dog. That's very similar to saying that you're a little man, or you're a sinner. And sinner in the Hebrew means to miss the mark. Like, if you're shooting a bow and arrow, you don't hit the target. Has nothing to do with fornication or adultery or the Ten Commandments. It really just says you don't get, what I am. It's telling us that we, just like Jesus, are gods. And it's been so religion organizations have taken control of that and turned it into money making and power control mechanism, that Jesus himself will have nothing to do with the modern day religions. So Pastor Murray wanted me to write down each of the song and give the biblical verses that connected to it and so forth. And I saw it in almost every song that Elvis sang. I would see a biblical connection.
So did you perform publicly, or did you tell us that you got stage fright the last minute?
Well, when I went to try to get, yes, I had a double cousin who was a great musician. I mean, great. And to this day, he has about 50 songs that he OD'd. He overdosed on whiskey and antidepressants.
Who are you talking about?
My double cousin.
Oh.
Okay. He was great. He could play the guitar, the drums, the piano, the fiddle, and he was a great songwriter. And he was, musically, he was much, much better than me. I was good looking and I could sing. And that's all I had going for me. I couldn't play any instruments. And, I did take guitar lessons as a kid. So maybe that's.
So what happened? Did you perform?
Yes, with him. He had a band. He played in a local club.
And you sang the Elvis songs?
Yes. And the whole thing was I wanted to redo them. I didn't want to do them like Elvis did them. I wanted to, soup them up and make the band the focus and me just be part of a band. The opposite of what, Carl controlled all the production.
Okay, I don't want to hear any more details, so let's get the
person okay.
Here. What happened?
Well, my cousin George, the person that I could perform with, OD'd. So, I tried to get him to go with me to Nashville. He wouldn't go. And later on, he OD'd. So, when I came up here to New Jersey, I came up here to give it one last chance in the casinos, and I hurt my back. And I had so much pain that I just lost interest in it.
What happened? I didn't get what happened.
I hurt my back at work.
Oh, hurt your back. Okay.
Yes, and I finally got surgery on it. But for like 4 years, I couldn't.
And when was that? How many years ago?
1989.
Ah, 30 years ago.
So I met a piano player that was playing in the casino. I called 7 casinos, and they all said, if you can do what you say you can do, we will. I called the A&R departments. They said, we will put you on stage. And I told them, I said, I don't have a band. You have to put together a union musicians. And they said, no problem. So I had it all set up. I hurt my back, and I mean, I was in tremendous pain for like almost 4 straight years. But I just lost all, you have to feel good the same. You can't be in pain. So I quit singing, and then I just, forgot about it. And it's only in the last 3 or 4 years that I decided to try it again when I realized that, the equipment is out here that you can do all this that you would do in the studio. You can do it all now on a computer with a software program called Pro Tools. So the drops are a very important part of this because my vocal cords, I work at a wastewater treatment plant, and they constantly are irritated. So the drops cured my sinus infection, but I still can't get my vocal cords to be tight. They're raw, they're inflamed. So it may not be till I retire that they will actually heal. But that was the primary reason I got on the drops. I'm like, man, I'll try anything to.
So are you going to do this? You're going to make some music?
Yes, I've been recording for several years now, and when I'm feeling good, when I'm rested, and my vocal cords are in good shape, I sound great because I use auto-tune and all the modern electronics that are out there, and they make you sound like God. I mean, it's just way better. The vocals are way better than, but I recorded all, like, with those concerts as they were at the ages. I recorded them all on cassettes. And I could listen to myself when I was in my 30s, and I did that, early 30s. And I could just easily, just like I was saying, when I could speak to the angels back then, it just flowed. Well, the music flowed out of me back then, and I had much better lung capacity, and I could just manipulate the words, do anything, any other I want to. Now,
Okay, I've heard enough. That's good. Very good. Okay. Thanks a lot. All right, now, you got to go now?
Yeah, but I've been wanting to try that angel stuff for a couple of weeks now.
We'll check to see if Roxy's in a good mood or not. How are you feeling, Roxy? You frustrated, or did he stay on point? What do you say, Roxy? Roxy's our barometer of how we're doing.
Well, actually, what you think about the angel?
Yeah.
Did you like it?
I was awake.
You were.
I really like it, and I find it very cool that you wanted to make it with black magic.
And let syllables come out of your mouth. Don't think about them. Just let your tongue and your throat and
whatever's inside of you come out. She does that.
I say,
that's good. Sounds like it to me.
I hope. Yeah, who knows who? What are we doing? The angel. Oh.
You're communicating with the angels. And I said, you know, you don't know what you're saying to them, only they know what you're saying to them.
Yeah.
Okay, I want to go back and talk to Bert about some ideas. So thanks a lot, Kyle. Thanks for your review of your life.
Yeah, well, I've been sitting and listening, but I work and I'm tired, and if I don't get on early, I have to like recover. So yeah. I really have been wanting to do this angel thing for the last couple of weeks because I heard Ian and Dr. Dean and them talking about it, and I was like, well, let me just get on here and show them what it sounds like.
Okay, good.
All right.
I'll check. All right, good night. I'll take your own. If she said just consonants, I'll tell her it's vowels, too.
Yeah, no, the vowels has got to be in there, or you would get nowhere.
Okay, thank you.
All right. But a good show. I enjoyed it.
Bert, all right.
Yeah.
So, Bert, we didn't do Don Seale's Light, all these themes. We never got into them.
No.
So you leave.
He made a reference. Had the book. He made a reference that how McLuhan sort of short circuited, or that probably not the good paraphrase of what he said, but it's just basically that McLuhan was sort of like giving a two dimensional presentation of the. Yes, two-dimensional, fitting his weight, whereas he felt or he saw Joyce's presentation of Light was a lot richer than what McLuhan was presenting.
Okay, here's my answer. I know what you're getting at. So Don, as a professor of literature, was dedicated to art artifacts. He knew the new media environment was art, but he, as a professor, was trying to figure out a curriculum. And he did not think that Finnegan's Wake was just a product of the radio era. McLuhan didn't have to make, you know, too much out of Finnegan's Wake because he was trying to show that all the artists, all the voices were responding to the radio sphere, the radio acoustic space, and that modern postmodern art, pop art, that were responding to the media dynamics of the 60s. So McLuhan was trying to point out the media dynamics, this new insight that Harold Innes tried to make an academic discipline, and the cultural effluvia, the cultural epiphenomena that came off of it, McLuhan didn't identify with that much, unless he could use those cultural phenomena like Eliot and Joyce to prove his media point. So I would say that he was more indifferent to cultural artifacts like Finney's Wake than Don Thiel. So that's one way to look at, to sort of give McLuhan an alibi. The other way is, that would be from McLuhan's point of view. We're supporting McLuhan from McLuhan's point. But from Don's point of view, the artifacts, the art, is really important. And Finney's Wake is super important. So what it was teaching us, you have to get the full brunt, and we didn't need to have summaries of it like Eric and Marshall did. We got to learn how to read the Wake and get into it. So it's up to you whether you're on Don's side or Marshall's side. I was always on Marshall's side, but I've been around the Wake and been part of societies. I now know a lot about the Wake, and I can appreciate and support Don's view of the Wake. But in the long run, I'm for media dynamics, and that led to Ion. So it's like McLuhan had a bigger view than Don.
Mm.
But I would say are you reading Don? You're reading The Virtual Marsh McLuhan. Now here's the paradox, is that because the media dynamics have changed and aren't like the analog media McLuhan analyzed, and the media has moved into more synesthetic and co-anesthetic levels, those are the two terms Don uses, Don's description in his books Beyond the Word and James Joyce's Technopoetics, using James Joyce, are more appropriate to our time than Marshall's work. In some ways, I would say. I support people understanding Don Thiel more than McLuhan. Because Don brought Finnegan's Wake up to the digital era. And the implications of the digital era is what's important. And Don kind of nails it in his book. So we're interweaving, you know, I'm on one side in one context and on another side in another context. Then a third context.
That's what makes this enjoyable, the whole looking at McLuhan and listening to his clips that you shared and reading his books, but then reading Thiel sheds another perspective.
Yeah, it's like Thiel fills in what Marshall didn't have time to write. Right? Marshall wasn't going to write about personal particulars. He was still doing the broad paint strokes. So Don fills in an important part of McLuhan's classes that McLuhan uttered but didn't spell out. So Don's stuff is like almost more interesting than McLuhan's right now. Other than these talks by McLuhan, nothing tops these talks. I mean, this is McLuhan, you know, is a really good experience. And like you say, you listen to McLuhan, these tapes we have, then you understand his writing better. So these recorded talks are McLuhan. That's something that Don can't approach. Don becomes puny compared to recorded McLuhan.
Yes. And what I found this week also in listening to your discussion of the chart, this is about page 137 in Take the Day.
Yep.
About the causes, the... Can you explain that?
Well, do you have a copy of the book?
Yes. Yes, I do.
You do? Okay.
Yes.
Let's go to that page. I think I've explained this for Roxy or somebody a few months ago.
Yes.
Do you want to explain it, Roxy?
Let me get the book.
Yeah.
While she's getting the book, Bob, what I find from reading Thiel and then listening to the clips you shared is that Take Today is like a book of poetry.
Yeah.
It's not really meant to be read from one to at the end, although you can because there's so much covered in each little paragraph or whatever, you know, how it's presented. It's really full of poetic descriptions of business.
Well, if you hear like de Kirchhoff talks, where we're doing Barry Nevitt, the complementariness of art and science today. See, you can't just be an artist. You can't just be a scientist. You're in the interval. You have to be something else. Take Today is something else. It's semi-facts, semi-poetry, semi-sociology, semi-dogma. It
yes.
covers many things, and that's the... That's why it's better than other books, because other books are usually categorizable as one thing or another. McLuhan remains ambivalent, which is the values Don celebrates, ambivalence.
Yes. I'm looking
thinking,
okay. Yeah, go ahead, Roxy.
Sorry. As I was looking for the book, you were supposed to do this in 69. I was born on 68 because these were supposed to be ready.
you're saying I
came forward and I was like, what happened?
That's why you went wide. Yes. As a little kid, Roxy would get out on the rooftops and scream at the stars and go, why? Why? Where is Connie? Where is Bob? Come on, what happened? Yeah, I'm sorry I've made so many people have such lousy lives for 40 years. Shit. Yeah, yeah. Okay, page 137 at the bottom. Effects, what is it? Causes become effects via concepts, whereas effects precede causes and process pattern recognition via percepts. And it's very important what's italicized, what is put in quotes.
Hmm.
Did I get it right? I don't have the book here, but I got it memorized. Causes
yes.
become effect. Causes in quotes become effects in quotes via concepts. Is via concepts italicized or just concepts or just via?
Both are. Via concepts.
Okay, both. Via concept. Whereas effects precede causes in process pattern recognition? In process pattern recognition?
Yes, in process pattern recognition.
Via
percepts.
And it's not italicized. So you have to know why things are in quotes and why they're italicized and why they aren't. So, Roxy, do you remember what I said? Could you explain it in some way, attempt to?
Yes, you see that there is actually not a real difference between the percepts and the concepts, that there was... But I was still looking for
that's a later
page.
Statement. That's a later statement. McLuhan said that Joyce made a universe out of two words, maybe his own name, James Joyce. So he makes Finney's Wake a universe out of two words. So McLuhan falls that he would take two words, eye and ear, acoustic space and visual space, percept and concept, and make a universe out of it. So he's making a universe out of it here, but when you're reading it, you're going to be seduced by print and misinterpreted. So he has to make the italics so that you don't keep it on one level. So if you're in visual space and you're using ideas to explain things, your concepts will be obsolesced by the electric environment. So you have to be conscious of the limitation of concepts. So causes can only be in quotes. You know, they're not the real causes. Effects can only be in quotes. And they are laid out when you're making use of ideas consciously. You know the limitations of it, but you're going to present content for a book. So McLuhan said concepts are useful to help people get a grip on reality. So McLuhan presented understanding media, eye and ear, and visual and acoustic space as concepts, because he knew people would read them as concepts, because that's how the book comes across. It's a medium for conceptual ideas. So you consciously take the causes and effects via concepts, effects and causes, and that process of their distinction and their merging. When you're writing it in print, you got to italicize it to show that you know you're doing it in print. But when you're going to just talk about percepts as, or ideas as percepts, or pattern recognition as percepts, you know you're dealing with the speed of light, so the effects will always precede the causes, and you wouldn't italicize anything. Because when you're using a book as a probe, you're not using concepts, you're using words as things. So the first part, concepts becoming effects via concepts, is a abstract process. That would be hendiathetos, right? Hendiathetos. But when you're using rhetoric, using percepts to illustrate process pattern recognition, you're using print as an anti-environment electric gauge, then you're doing prophyrokos rhetoric. So that's what I would attempt to have you believe is the explanation. Does that help there, Bert?
Yes. So
wait, you got blipped out. What'd you say?
So it's basically using print versus dialogue or rhetoric.
Okay, using print as a concept consciously, and then using print as a probe. When he puts it into quotes, and then saying it's via concepts, that is like McLuhan making up stuff.
Okay.
But when you want to throw the book at the electric environment and make the book so powerful that it serves as an anti-environment, that's when you're using the book as a perceptual probe, not for ideas. So that's sort of the difference there.
Okay.
Effects precede causes in process pattern recognition. It's almost like what Roxy says she douses when she makes her videos. Ion helps her, does the work. Ion is talking about the work being done there by the phrase effects preceding causes. Teams in the electric era, you have to understand how to create without pushing a point of view, pushing a limited angle. You have to become a rhapsode. So the first statement is via concepts is the translator or narrator. The second part of the sentence is the rhapsode, using words as things. So one is abstract, visual space, that's via concepts. The other is an acoustic space.
Acoustic space. Wow.
Where words are things, not thoughts.
Wow. So then that explains what you do.
Beg your pardon?
That explains your approach of what
yes.
you've been presenting
what
in
I
your
do.
Chart.
Yes. Yeah. Now, I think that with ION, they flip back and forth. That's where Roxy brings in that there's no difference between percepts and concepts. When you're on radio, you can't make a book effect. So you would use concepts differently. But when you write a book, knowing what the book does enhances the fragmenting of the eye, then you would do effects precede, no, causes become effects via concepts. Now, we present ideas with ION. It is ideas in the end. Living at the speed of thought, we become an idea culture. Or at least with ION, we do.
Yeah.
ION's creating new notions for your mind, for your imagination. New scenarios. So, those are ideas. Those are images. So yeah. With Ion, the two merge. Everything always merges with Ion. Probably make that a rule. The three kingdoms merge. Father, Son, and Holy Ghost merge. Whatever other things are that merge, that are, that would merge. So, Ion is the destroyer of our world.
Yes. What? And that, there was one statement that you've made, that Ion has made, that I thought about this week. And if you really listen to the words, like, what you see is not real, but what you don't see is real.
Yeah.
That flips everything. That flips everything of what someone has ever read.
Hand signals for the blind. What you can't see is real.
Yes.
Blind.
Yes.
So, you got something to say, Roxy? Oh, sorry, Roxy fell off. Now she's back. Okay.
Oh.
How do you know you fall off? It just goes dead?
No, it's like it hangs itself back.
Hangs up. Okay.
Yeah, I have to log in again.
Yeah, you're doing this through Skype, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Don't you say you're doing the hand signals for the blind because we're all blind in the new environment. We don't see.
Right.
And also the effects. That's another thing you explained me, how we are not aware of what's going on until much later, like
yeah.
You went said. So in a way, you are already explaining the blind with your hand signals.
Hand signals.
Hand signals. What's going
my
on?
My massage. Yeah, my rolfing. Ion hand signals you. Ion massages you. I'm just realizing, shit, that I coined that in 76. That is another variation of Ion. Hand signals for the blind. That's what Ion is.
Yes, because I see the shock, for example, like McLuhan says, as an example, the bomb. We're not prepared for the bomb, for the effects of new technologies. And there's always like a big shock, like a trauma.
Yeah.
When the environment becomes visible, like now with the mystery landscape, things that we don't understand. But when we are aware of what's going on, we don't have this trauma or this fear that we're being captured or something else is controlling the world, something not human, something like
right.
The technologies are going to, they're going to chip us and all these paranoias.
Yeah. Oh, it's a happy day. It's a happy day, oh happy day, when you experience the hand signals for the blind. When you
know Bob is real.
Yes, when you know Bob is not just clip art. Bob is a real fucking environment that the Church of Genius predicted and then walked away from because they had no more role. Their job had been done.
No, they tapped into that, but they could not really understand what was going on.
Yeah, it's
so,
like, you know, your talent is your tragic flaw. That's called hamartia in Aristotle's world. Hamartia, hamartia, your tragic flaw.
Hmm.
That's like your talent, your specialty, will become a disservice. That's what happens to post-Aboriginal humans, whereas pre-Aboriginal or Aboriginal people don't have specialism. So they don't suffer and create a special talent, which then does you in.
But that's what McLuhan said. You can't predict the future. It's already here.
Yes.
And you were
already there.
You have
to understand what he knows. You can predict the future when you understand what McLuhan's talking about. When you get get his insight.
You were already there, but they could not understand exactly what you were. They made it seem to be like a sect or like a cult leader or...
Yeah, they thought I wanted to be a cult leader. I always said, look, I'm the slackest person on the planet. I'm your god of slack. You know, when Sue Bone showed me the People magazine review of the book in the fall of 83, I read it and I said, that's me. And then I either told that to Sue or she had already written on something, that's you, over it. I can't remember the order of me realizing it and her realizing, but she thought it was me, so she gave it to me. I read it, and I said, this is me. She didn't tell me it was about me. I just read it, and then I found out she felt that. Does she agree with me? That was my whole point, is that the slack, it's the particulars of whatever they got grievance about, what they think I'm lying about, I'm not lying about the slack factor. There's nobody who's had a slack life like I've had. I mean, totally utopia for decades. And then I end up, you know, I work my way up the utopic change and end up in the best utopia, Maui. Utopia was always with me. I went through the LaRouche phase, the McLuhan phase, the Thompson phase, the Coker phase of utopia, until I got to Dobbstown. And then it went beyond Dobbstown. Yes, Roxy,
because
you had an outburst, outburst of enthusiasm?
They just see themselves as, they don't just know of themselves as a chemical body, just
right.
A small part of themselves. And, like, for example, every weekend we learn something new about how complex reality is and ourselves.
Right, and I want to go into that a bit.
When we know how complex things are, really, that doesn't seem that extraordinary anymore. It's like, yeah, it's possible. It's another possibility. Yes, that's what.
Yeah, I was so complex for decades, but it was simple, and nobody believed the simple part. Now,
yes, and if they knew, like, you are like 4,000 years old, and you are what you're really doing, and it's beyond that church of this genius fiction.
It's so beyond that, it's ridiculous. Like, they're lucky we even mention them. But we like to help people who helped us along the way. We like to acknowledge them.
Yes, and there is not only this Bob, this complex Bob, there is many.
Oh,
so they can have nightmares.
Nightmares. Okay, next point, Bert.
Bob, but one thing. I remember earlier archives that Ion first said there was only one Bob, and then he said there were maximum two.
Yeah.
Is that correct? Only is one or two, and you've already talked about the two because the other one was the one who arranged in 1911 the 21st century.
Well, there's this other Bob. What was said the first year or so was the guy I meet on the beach walkway, and I'm with Carolyn, and in the end of our interaction, Carolyn will leave with him. She likes him better than me. That's the two Bob thing. The 1911 guy, I don't know if he's the other Bob. Yeah, I don't know what he is.
Okay.
And he's a subset of Ophanel.
Yeah, that's what opens. I mean, someone, cream cheese listening in would say these people are crazy, but just to play with that, everything's a recording and neutrinos and there's no time. That opens up a whole area that no one has ever explored, but you and Carolyn.
Right.
Because you've always have lived in the future.
Yes.
So that's really something to play with, just to be able to play with those ideas. And
well, there you are. We open up the mind with the new scenarios, the new ideas. So we're causes, what you thought were causes become mere effects of larger causes via our ionic concepts.
Yes. Yes.
And then when you have an anomaly, that is your experience of effects preceding causes via process pattern, in process pattern recognition via percepts. That's an anomaly experience.
Yeah, thank you for that, because that's what's been the experience for the last 3 weeks.
Right.
For me.
And then we present concepts to help you get a grasp on the second phase, the via percepts part.
Yeah. And
so
that's
why
the running time.
Yeah, go ahead.
For me, the most interesting part of this is, like, they're trying to understand things in the linear
yeah.
way. Like,
yeah, that's what I was going to say, yes.
And here, it's like we have this, the acoustic dome of all of us being there now. And ion make us go back and forth. And again, he talks about the Hebrews and the Canaanites, and then he's talking about the carbon or
yeah.
something like that. And I mean, how can you reduce what you are in any way? I mean, it's impossible
yeah, you can't
in any way.
It.
It's not.
It's a dance that you have to join into. The dance is ongoing. It's a marathon dance.
Yes, and the many bodies and the many aspects of what's going on in the different levels.
Yeah. So let's go to.
I think that's part of the ascending, like your experiences
yes.
are much more complex, or you're aware of those complexities, that it's not only the linear and the chemical body.
Or the verbal. It's not the subverbal. You're kind of in a silent zone, noticing sensory mutations or anomalies. And you're not chattering very much to yourself. You start saying stuff and it just collapses because you know that those causes don't define it. Those words, those routines.
Yes, and you start engaging things like angel talk. Like, I mean, it's how we entertain ourselves Yeah, what will they say if they hear Kyle? Like, and that's part of your program. It's like...
Yeah. Okay, let's go to the last page or second last page on Take Today, because this is the other interesting quotations. So you agree, that sentence, I think that's one of the most complex sentences in Take Today, page 137.
Yes.
So if you go to maybe it's 297, the bottom of the page where it says, or two-thirds down, the world of yestermorrow, yesterday and tomorrow.
Yeah.
That's a pretty interesting couple of paragraphs. So who would like to read it? Maybe you could split it.
Bert.
Okay, Bert.
Okay. The familiar idea of making the news now yields to making the world itself.
Hey, Bert, you blipped out.
Yes.
Am I blipping? Did you guys hear that blip?
No.
Okay, maybe it's my phone. Okay, So making the news is in italics, is in quotation marks, right?
Yes.
Right.
Right. So indicate that as you read it. What's in
okay, I'll put,
quotation
okay,
marks?
Okay, make the quotes. Okay. For the best part of a century, we have been programming human
No. We want to hear the
Go
first
back.
Sentence again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry. The familiar idea, quotes, making the news, unquote, now yields to making the world itself. For the best part of a century, we have been programming human consciousness with retrievals and replays of tribal unconsciousness.
Is unconscious in quotes?
Unconscious. No.
No.
Not in quotes. But there's our talk about the unconscious and subconscious. So what is it? We're retrieving?
We're programming human consciousness with retrievals and replays of tribal unconscious.
Yeah.
The complementary of this process would seem to be, in quote, natural, unquote, program for the period ahead. Italicized programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness.
And what's in italics?
The last part, programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness.
Yeah, that's now, is the unconscious in quotes?
No.
Okay. So this relates to the Roxy's video, you know, fifth or sixth on the digital unconscious and that. This is appropriate to go into this after what you put together about the history of the subconsciousness. So could you read that last sentence again? The programming, okay. the consciousness part.
Okay. And all this is in italicized. Programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness.
Well, what's the part before that, before it becomes a
I'm sorry, okay, I'll read the entire sentence,
yeah.
Okay. The complementary of this process would seem to be, quotation, natural program for the period ahead. And then the rest is italicized, programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness.
Does that italicized come after a colon? Or a comma.
Yes. Okay, I'll read it again. I'm sorry. I'll pull the thing, Bob. The complementary of this process would seem to be the natural, which is in quotations, natural, program for the period ahead, colon, programming the unconscious with the recently achieved forms of consciousness.
Right. I'm thinking that ion one, the 99% error with James Curtis was people thought it was reprogramming their tribal unconscious. What does he say? This is it, reprogramming, replays, offering replays of the tribal unconscious?
No, we are reprogramming the consciousness with the replay and retrieving of the tribal
unconscious. That's
unconscious.
How the little men interpreted Iondome. What we're gauging now, you were supposed to go through that and then stay around and engage phase two with the recently achieved forms of consciousness where Ion says there's no little men and the guff is empty. See how perfect that is? That McLuhan thing explains what Ion is meaning when he says there's no more little men. That's recently achieved forms of consciousness. That's pretty profound. I never put this two together, but it occurs to me as we're talking.
Yes, and that's why I say they stay in the replay.
Yes, they stay in the replay of the tribal unconscious because they haven't studied the World of Mortar, the Dobbstown course, to get through that and then get to understand phase two, the recently achieved forms of consciousness. I asked Barry Nevitt, who wrote that, what is a recently achieved form of consciousness? And he says Finnegan's Wake. See, so you got to understand Finnegan's Wake.
Wow.
So then what's the next part? Okay, what, Roxy? Go ahead.
Yes, that's what I told you. You are what McLuhan wanted to achieve because he was an engineer and he saw the Finnegan's Wake is like what's going on now.
Yeah.
Like all the clouds, all the technologies are there, happened. we expanded ourselves, all, even the non-physical.
Yeah.
And, yeah, we're in the Finnegan ways.
Awake. Finnegan's awake. Yes, you'll see that in the last
yes,
line.
Yes, sir, Morrow. Yes, sir, Morrow. Yeah.
Or the bottom line. Read what's at the very bottom in capital letters.
Go ahead, Roxy.
Finnegan, a resurrection.
Yes. A resurrection. Okay, so what you were just saying, you said, well, I want to say this. If you've seen the videos, Bert, there's one, I don't know if it's five or six, where McLuhan is saying we must program the consciousness or this and that. And then she types in my idea. We're not programming the conscious. We're reprogramming blah, 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 whatever I said. And when he says the human environment is now an art form, I go, the post-human environment. And she writes over, like a plimsist, writes over what McLuhan says with what I say. So that's really well done. You have to note what our idea is opposed to what McLuhan's saying.
Yes.
So what's the next part after the italics?
This procedure would invoke a new form of consciousness radically different from former consciousness.
That's
everybody becomes a voluntary participant in creating diversity without loss of identity.
Yeah.
Man is the content of the environment he creates, whether of hardware or software, whether of consciousness or unconsciousness.
Wait a minute. Is there any quotation marks in any of what you said?
Sorry, I missed that. Okay. Everybody becomes a voluntary participant in creating diversity without loss of identity. Man is the content of the environment he creates, whether of, quotation, hardware or, quotation, software, whether of consciousness or unconsciousness. There is therefore no technical alternative to, quote, humanism, even though for many of these would include the divine grace of the superhuman. Innovation is obsolete, so is obsolescence, as information speed up transforms man and his world into art form.
Good.
And that last sentence was all in italics.
Can you read the italicized part again?
Yes, it's the last sentence. Innovation is obsolete, so is obsolescence, as information speed up transforms man and his world into art form.
Right. So when I encourage people to speak here, it's because obsolescence is obsolete. No statement is obsolete now.
And I think it's also because we are already, all technologies were expanding some part of our perception, but now
yeah.
we reach the end of the expansions with non-physical.
Right.
So the technologies are obsolete.
They're turning into animals, imprisoning people.
Wow.
Yeah. And the microorganisms of the humans is being attacked by the animal level of the media environments. But, of course, we have an antidote to that. So when you say expanding consciousness, Roxy, when you say expanding, McLuhan says that we're not expanding. We're retrieving the subconscious. When Leary and everybody goes around talking about, let's expand your consciousness, that actually was retrieving tribal replays of the unconscious. Because the environment created the expansion of your consciousness and then turned in on itself. So you got to be careful when you use the term expanding your consciousness.
Oh, what I meant is we're expanding our perception, sorry.
Yeah. And retrieving. So then you bring in the tetrad. You're expanding or extending. You're retrieving, obsolescing, and flipping in the opposite. That's to use the
four rules.
And
we arrive to the fusion with the technology, which is organic. It's not the hardware. It's the ISO.
Yeah, nor software. So McLuhan is indicating there that Understanding Media listing the analog media, that they don't exist anymore. So he puts hardware and software, or visual space and tactile space, into quotes. They are not of any major constituent substance anymore. So he predicted what Baudrillard developed, the idea that there's no media right now. No media environment. So you look out the window, you see media environments. So what is it they're trying to point to? The effects that precede the causes. The effects of no analog media are here. Later, you'll have communication abilities and won't even be able to see what you're using. Might be chipped inside you.
I think that's why Ion calls it the unenvironment, because there are no more medias. So
right.
There is no more
right.
environment.
That's right. And you're not controlled by them. That's a good one for you, Bert.
Yeah. The wheels are turning after you said that.
Yeah. So you're reading McLuhan books. Technically,
yes.
They're obsolete. But your mind is a bit slow. Everybody's mind's slow. So you got to go through what was avant-garde 40 years ago. You got to understand that so that you can see what's really happening now on the conceptual level.
Yes. It's just fascinating to be able to see it.
It's
yeah.
a very great, good support to get what you are saying.
Yeah. It heals the mind.
Like when he says the changes happening with the electric environment are not visible, and it's the same now with the electronic ionization of slack.
Right.
And using him is a way to understand what's going on, because Ion is explaining these changes. And
it's a way to humorously understand what's wrong with the church subgenius. Here we are. The voice of God is using their term, slack. Well, it was the people's, but they copyright-wrote it. If Stan could actually listen, what? They're saying electron ionization of slack. What is that? You know, now his partner, Philo Drummond, who he started off the church with, a few months ago, he asked me in LinkedIn to become a business partner of his, whatever LinkedIn does. You know LinkedIn? You know that network?
Yes.
I never did it because he might a bit suspicious. They want to have a way of hooking into whatever you can see. I guess if I said yes, then they can look at my site. But I have nothing there, but don't want people looking at it. Maybe they would write in stupid stuff. But anyways, I'm not sure why he made the overture. Maybe he's realizing something's going on. Doug can't realize it, but maybe he does. It's not significant whether they get it or not. These are just fodder for the satire part here. You know, they're hoiked up as an interesting human stubbornness.
That's a good description.
Yeah.
Human stubbornness.
So that last page, is that the third last page, 297?
Yes.
And then you get the bibliography, but of the text, that's the third last page.
Yes.
You know, was it reinventing yestermorrow, right? Reinventing. Is that what it is? Reinventing?
The world of yestermorrow.
What? The world of the observer.
Reinventing the world of yestermorrow.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good phrase, and that's what Ion's advocating you do. The time element for little man is a yestermorrow situation. There's no present. There's my proof. There's no now. Just yesterday or tomorrow. Right in the word. Doesn't say yesterday, today, tomorrow. It says yestermorrow.
which is the now.
No. Well, maybe yestermorrow is the now, but there's no now. But for your mind's sake, yestermorrow is your propped up now, retrieved now.